Headlines. Iran says it won't allow the ongoing negotiations on reviving the 2015 nuclear deal to become attritional, warning it will stop the talks if the other side lacks seriousness. At least a dozen Afghan policemen are killed in two separate attacks in the violence-racked country. Also coming up, the US says it will help India fight a massive coronavirus surge after Washington was censured for not releasing surplus vaccines to New Delhi. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story this hour: Iran's top delegate at the negotiations to revive the 2015 nuclear deal says the country will neither act in haste nor allow the talks to become attritional. Abbas Araghchi warned that Iran would stop the negotiations if it detects the other side lacks seriousness, tries to buy time, or seeks to add new issues to those under discussion. He said Iran's stance is very clear. Sanctions must be removed, verification should take place, and then Tehran will return to its commitments under the nuclear agreement. Araghchi said both sectoral sanctions and those targeting natural and legal persons should be removed. He said the talks are currently on the right track, but challenges remain. The Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister stressed that there are currently no negotiations over the sequential removal of the sanctions. The Palestinian resistance movement has called for greater unity among Palestinians as Israel increases atrocities during the holy month of Ramadan. Hamas urged the Palestinians to head to Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds. It urged them to say prayers in front of what it called Zionist stations that prevent their entry to the city. Hamas also called on resistance groups in the Gaza Strip to prepare for targeting the enemy's vital military sites. Dozens of rockets have already been fired from the territory towards Israel in the past several days. Anger boils after Israel tightened restrictions on Palestinian worshippers in occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds and launched a crackdown on protests against the Kurds.
The Palestinian Authority, along with different political factions, held Israel fully responsible for the serious deterioration in occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds over the past few days and called on the international community to put pressure on the Israeli regime to stop its provocations. Israeli police and settler violence erupted in the area on Thursday night and continued through Friday, leaving over 100 of Palestinians wounded and scores more arrested.
Since the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, Israeli forces had been escalating measures against the people there, starting by cutting off loudspeakers of Al-Aqsa Mosque. That's why our people in Al-Quds are protesting and rising against oppression and crimes by the Israeli regime.
But the issue is not only between the Israeli police and the Palestinians. Since the start of the holy month of Ramadan, every night hundreds of Israeli settlers rush to the streets of the holy city and assault Palestinians under the protection of the Israeli forces. The extremist settlers chant death to Arabs during their marches. Hundreds of ultra-nationalist Israelis marched through central Jerusalem towards the Damascus Gate, which police had barricaded as a precaution.
Verbal condemnation of Israel over the aggression is not enough. The Palestinian factions must offer all forms of support to Al-Quds and its residents. Palestinians must stand united behind Al-Quds. What's going on is an uprising, and here in occupied West Bank, protests and demonstrations should continue. This is the least we can do to defend Al-Quds.
Palestinians say Israeli police want to prevent them from saying their prayers and the usual Ramadan evening gatherings at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and outside the Damascus Gate.
Protests which flared up in Jerusalem Al-Quds have now spilled over to the occupied West Bank in defense of the Holy City and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinians warned that Tel Aviv is heading towards a heavy-handed crackdown against them in the occupied territories to ward off another surge in Palestinians' protests and anger. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
The Iraqi Prime Minister has suspended the health minister over a deadly fire at a COVID hospital in Baghdad. Mustafa al-Kadhimi also referred Hassan al-Tamimi for investigation. The capital's governor and the head of the health department for eastern Baghdad will be questioned too. The premier had earlier called the fire a crime. The Iraqi Interior Ministry says at least 82 people died and over 100 were wounded in the fire. It was sparked by an explosion by a tank, oxygen tank. Iraq Civil Defense Arm says the hospital had no fire protection system. The country's Human Rights Commission has called for the dismissal of the health minister. Parliament is due to devote its Monday session to the tragedy. The United States has started to pull its military forces out of Afghanistan. Commander of the US-led coalition in Afghanistan, General Austin Scott Miller, confirmed that Washington had begun to withdraw troops from the country in local areas. The top general, however, added that the official date to begin the troop withdrawal would be the 1st of May. US President Joe Biden recently announced that he would pull American forces out of the Asian country in the coming months. This comes as US troops were scheduled to have fully withdrawn from Afghanistan by May 2021 under a peace accord signed between the Taliban and the administration of former US President Donald Trump. The Taliban accused Washington of violating the provisions of the agreement. At least a dozen Afghan policemen have been killed amid ongoing fighting in the violence ravaged the country. Seven officers lost their lives in an attack Sunday in the province of Logar, south of the capital Kabul. They were killed in an ambush by the Taliban. In a separate offensive, another five policemen were killed when a suicide bomber ran an explosives-laden car into a police vehicle in the southern Taliban bastion of Kandahar. The attacks come despite the years-long presence of US troops on the ground. Staying in Afghanistan, the head of the country's security agencies have touched upon plans to withdraw foreign forces from the country, giving assurances that the Afghan military is, like in the past, capable of tackling threats imposed by insurgents and terror groups.
Nowadays, Afghan security and military forces are witnessing the last months of the presence of their US-led NATO allies. These forces are determined to protect their country against any threats on their own without any outside help. As top military officials here say, the Afghan armed forces will overcome any challenges after the pullout of foreign troops by drawing on the experience they have gained in fighting terrorism over the past two decades.
Currently, US-led NATO forces are stationed in their bases only in Bagram and Balkh provinces, but they will leave these key bases too. We won't be worried about this because our forces have, over the past two decades, gained enough experience on how to counter terrorists.
Confirming that Afghan military and security forces are still in need of financial support, the Afghan government says the good news is that foreign forces will hand over military hardware to the Afghan National Defense and Security Forces when they leave the country by September 11.
Based on our negotiations with foreign military officials, they will hand over weapons and other military equipment worth $1 billion to Afghan National Defense and Security Forces when they leave the country.
According to experts here, because the Afghan National Armed Forces are popular among locals, Afghan people are expected to stand by these troops and support any possible scenario that might unfold after the withdrawal of foreign forces from Afghanistan. Still, they urge both the Afghan government and the Taliban to set aside their differences and use the Afghan peace process as a great opportunity to put an end to the decades-long misery of the war-weary nation.
Unfortunately, we have gained nothing from peace summits over the past 2 years. Instead, war in the country has intensified. I think it is high time that both sides forgot about military options, set aside their differences, and launched meaningful negotiations to end the war here.
Top Afghan security officials say they stand ready to safeguard the nation in case the Taliban continue to insist on saying no to negotiations.
According to the head of Afghanistan's National Directorate of Security, the Taliban is now weaker than ever due to alleged rifts between the militant group's main leadership in Quetta Shura and its offshoot in Pakistan's Peshawar. This is thought to be a major stumbling block if the militants seek to put up a fight against some 300,000 Afghan security and defense forces after the withdrawal of nearly 10,000 foreign troops from Afghanistan. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The United States has joined several other Western nations to help coronavirus hit India. US President Joe Biden said Washington is determined to reciprocate the assistance New Delhi provided Washington in the early stages of the COVID-19 outbreak. The Biden administration has been under pressure to provide the Asian nation with its surplus coronavirus vaccines, a move it now says it is considering. The United Kingdom, France and Germany have also vowed to help. India has set the global record for daily new cases, having logged nearly 350,000 infections. The number of total cases in the world's second most populous nation is now inching closer to 17 million. It also set a new record of deaths with nearly 2,800 fatalities, pushing the total to more than 192,000. European countries, meanwhile, keep COVID restrictions or tighten them as part of measures to battle the virus. Germany says it is not planning to ease lockdown measures before the end of May. The country on Sunday reported 120 new COVID deaths in 24 hours. That brings its total fatalities to more than 81,000. There were also over 18,700 new infections there, pushing Germany's total caseload to around 3.3 million. Russia reported over 8,700 new daily corona infections and 332 new deaths. The country has imposed curfews and banned entry of foreign nationals. Several European countries, including France and Italy, have banned arrivals from coronavirus hotspots, India. The second wave of the coronavirus pandemic is wreaking havoc in the Indian administered Kashmir. This is both in terms of healthcare and the economy, in an area where tourism is a major source of locals' income. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt brings us a report from the Indian administered Kashmir.
The Indian-administered Kashmir has seen a surge in coronavirus cases in times with the rest of the country. The pandemic was almost brought under control in February in the region, but within weeks, the numbers have swollen again to around 18,000 positive cases. Healthcare experts equally blame Kashmir's administration and locals for the spike. Despite the risks, the administration in Kashmir allowed and organized spring festivals. They were attended by thousands without following precautions, leading to a resurge in coronavirus cases. And to worsen things, tourists' inflow to Kashmir went unchecked. Kashmir has hardly witnessed normalcy since August 2019, when India unilaterally stripped the region of its autonomous status. Now, amid the second wave of the pandemic, fresh tensions are expected as new lockdowns would collapse the region's economy. Farooq Ahmed Shah, a hotelier, is discussing the ongoing situation with his staff. He's worried, but not for himself.
We have witnessed back-to-back lockdowns. Unfortunately, we do hiring every year, but with no time, we have to lay off. I'm not much worried about my business, but for these young men who have no source of daily income or savings that can sustain them in tough times. Kashmir's economy has always been suffering, but since 2019, Kashmir is witnessing horrible times and people are forced into poverty.
Kashmir's economy is dependent on tourism and agriculture. This year, the region witnessed year-long bookings in advance. However, the new wave of the pandemic in India has triggered panic and cancellations.
The pandemic since 2020 has 100% affected us, but you know, from November, the tourism started reviving, and December mid onwards, it was getting better, and from January, Kashmir was 100%, almost 100% packed, if not 100, but 80% for sure. So since March ending, you know, due to the surge in cases across country, the tourism is coming down again. It is a huge loss for the industry.
However, Shamim and many others like him are more worried for Kashmir's health infrastructure. They fear a looming disaster if the coronavirus situation is not taken seriously.
With more than 18,000 active coronavirus cases in Jammu and Kashmir, the administration of this conflict-torn region is at a crossroads. The question is whether to impose a lockdown and face its economic consequences or endanger people and overload the fractured health sector. To break the chain of infections, the administration is trying its best. However, the people also have to act responsibly. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
Iran is initiating the final stage of a local COVID vaccine. This as the country is grappling with the fourth wave of the pandemic and is scrambling to vaccinate its citizens as soon as possible. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Coviran is inching closer to the market. The Iranian-made vaccine kick-started the third human trial phase after proving safe and effective against the virus in previous trials. The third phase will involve injecting the jabs to a statistical population of 20,000 volunteers. Developers say they're certain that the vaccine provides immunity of up to 70% against the coronavirus. But it's only after the third phase that an accurate figure can be achieved.
Already we have achieved the figures, but because we want to have more figures, so in third clinical trials that you have to go for more people to vaccinate. And that's why in third phase we include more people, like 20,000 in compared with 200 or 280 in second phase.
The headquarters for the execution of Imam Khomeini's order, which is in charge of Coviran's development, says it has already launched the production lines of the vaccines due to emergency.
Coviran factories are built in two phases. The first phase, which is complete and ready for use, has a capacity to produce up to 3.5 million doses of Coviran jabs each month. The second phase, which is under construction, will produce 15 million doses per month. Both will work in full swing once we receive the necessary permits in almost 2 months.
Coviran works based on an inactivated coronavirus. Its developers say lab results indicate that it's also effective against new variants of the virus. Other than Coviran, Iran is working on 7 other homegrown vaccines, each based on a different platform to immunize the human body against COVID-19. This as the country has already started vaccination of the most vulnerable groups, mainly using Russia's Sputnik V. Once the third phase is over, Coviran will be the first ever Iranian-made COVID vaccine that makes its way to the market. This as Iran is grappling with the fourth and most lethal ever wave of the pandemic, which has put biotech firms in a race against time to get their jabs to the mass production stage. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Elsewhere, the Indonesian military has found a submarine that went missing 4 days ago. It says all 53 crew members are dead. The vessel was found on the seafloor in waters off Bali. It had cracked into 3 pieces. Indonesian authorities say the crew were not to blame for the accident. The submarine lost contact on Wednesday. As it was preparing to conduct a torpedo drill, President Joko Widodo has sent his condolences to the families of the crew members. He described the sailors from the missing submarine as Indonesia's best patriots. Wraps up our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
the month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, Salam and welcome to the program. We are with you with another episode of the special series for Ramadan. According to the Islamic narrations, the faithful have a lot of reciprocal rights, and many rewards will be given to those who observe these rights and try to help others. Interestingly, on the 12th of the blessed month of Ramadan in the first year after Hijra, that is migration from Mecca to Medina, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, established the covenant of brotherhood between pairs of Muslims. Thus, Muslims became brothers two by two according to their thoughts and friendship. For instance, Salman became the brother of Abu Zar. Finally, the Prophet made Imam Ali his brother, as there was no one qualified to be his brother. The Prophet told Imam Ali, "You to me are like Aaron to Moses, except that there will be no prophet after me." Ibn Asir, famous Sunni scholar, writes in his book, Asadul Qaba, that the Prophet concluded the covenant of fraternity with Imam Ali two times, and each time he said to him, "You are my brother in the world and the hereafter." This act of the Prophet was very significant, as it showed how lofty and valuable Imam Ali's status was for the Prophet. Thick dust will nullify fasting, and there is no difference between ordinary dust and the powder of foods like wheat, flour, or even smoke. Of course, if the dust doesn't reach the throat, it will not nullify fasting. The steam of bathroom or sauna will not nullify fasting unless it is so thick that it changes into water drops in the mouth. Smoking nullifies fasting. Using special sprays for inhalation will nullify fasting unless the person has to take it for his health. Oxygen capsule that is used for artificial respiration does not nullify fasting. But fumigation will nullify fasting if it causes thick vapor to enter the throat. As a reminder, for a couple of episodes, we have been presenting parts of Abu Hamza Thumali supplication. We said that Abu Hamza was one of the companions of Imam Sajjad, the fourth infallible successor of the Prophet of Islam. Abu Hamza was from Kufa and his name was Sabit ibn Dinar Thumali. He lived a long life to see four Imams, namely Imam Sajjad, Imam Baqir, Imam Sadiq, and Imam Qazin, peace upon them. Imam Reza, peace upon him, said on him, "Abu Hamza in his time was like Salman and Luqman in their time." It is noteworthy that Salman was one of the best Muslims and close companions of the Prophet of Islam, and Luqman was a sage in ancient times who was very pious and wise. After a short break, we will continue whispering Abu Hamza Somali supplication. O God, engage us in your remembrance and keep us away from your wrath, and save us from your punishment, and give us sustenance from your bounties, and grant us from your grace, and grant us Hajj of your house and pilgrimage to the tomb of your prophet. May your mercy, forgiveness, and satisfaction be on him and his progeny. You are near to us and answer our prayers. Grant us to obey you and cause us to die while we are in your creed and sticking to your prophet's practice. O God, forgive me and my parents and have mercy on them as they raised me while I was a child. Return their good deeds with reward and their evil deeds with forgiveness. O God, forgive the faithful men and women, the living and the dead, and link between us and them with good deeds. O God, forgive our living and dead, our present and absent, our male and female, our children and adult, our free and slave. O God, bless Muhammad and progeny of Muhammad, and inform me with good. My master, I am the child that you raised, and the ignorant that you taught, and the stray that you guided, and the low that you exalted, and the fearful that you secured, and the hungry that you satiated, and the thirsty that you gave water to, and the naked that you clothed, and the poor that you enriched, and the unable that you empowered, and the humble that you dignified, and the sick that you cured, and the beggar that you spent to, and the sinner that you covered his sin, and the guilty that you pardoned. And I am the little that you amplified, and the weak that you helped, and the outcast that you gave refuge. I am the one who has dared unto his master. I am the one who has disobeyed the ruler of heaven. Yet you gave me respite with your forbearance and covered me with your cover as if you had neglected me. And you kept me aloof from the consequences of my sins as if you had been ashamed of me. My God, when I disobeyed you, I didn't disobey as if I had been denying your lordship and belittling your command, but a flaw overcame me and my inner self deceived me, and your covering emboldened me. Now, whom should I connect if you disconnect me? Had I not been hopeful of your nobility and vast mercy, and had you not prevented me from losing hope, I would have been hopeless upon remembering my sins. O God, by the covenant of Islam, I take recourse to you, and by the respect of the Quran, trust in you. And through the love that I have for the unlettered prophet, I seek proximity with you. Therefore, don't make my reward the reward of one who has worshipped other than you.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering the doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, all over the world, Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Q&A and Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In this series of shows, we are trying to answer questions, doubts, or misconceptions which are being asked or are sent to this radio station with regard to Islamic theology. For this, we try to invite Islamic scholars and speakers from Qom Seminary schools. Like always, we have invited Sheikh Murtada Karimi to help us with his answer to the questions which are going to be asked concerning the holy month of Ramadan. The questions that we have and we shall pose and talk about are mostly in this very session about the holy month of Ramadan. Sheikh, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam and thank you for having me.
Dear brothers and sisters, in our today's show, we shall talk about another aspect of the holy month of Ramadan, or the philosophy of fasting in this holy month, and the kind of look that Islam has over this issue. Some might say that why Islam is so strict about the holy month of Ramadan, that is, in case there are some people who do not observe the fasting rules, they are actually condemned to some punishments. So why is it so? If a person is going to stay Muslim and he has to and he is obliged to fast, so has Islam ever thought about the conditions that a person is in? Like, for example, in case he is suffering from a disease or any other situation that we don't know, and it depends from case to case. But this is the question that we need to ask from Sheikh Murtada Karimi, Islamic researcher from Qom Seminary School. Sheikh, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for accepting the invitation, Sheikh. The question of the day, Sheikh, is that why Islam is so strict about the fasting and the holy month of Ramadan? As I said earlier, why Islam cannot be flexible with the believers in case they are not able to fast and they eat, for example, eat or drink in the streets? So, and some punishments have been actually legislated for those who actually do not observe the rules of fasting. Is there anything special about it that Islam is that strict on it? But actually, I am asking this question from as it was asked, I know that Islam is not that strict. But when those listeners or those brothers and sisters who are listening to us need to, inshallah, stay tuned and receive the answer from Sheikh Murtada Karimi. But Islam, as it is said, it is the religion of mercy, the religion of rahmah. And all the conditions that a person might be in are considered in Islamic rulings. So let's listen to the answer of Sheikh Murtada Karimi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you mentioned, socially speaking, we have different types of understanding this question. Is Islam strict about an obligation called fasting? Yes. I mean, as a Muslim, you believe in the religion of Islam, you believe in the Prophet, you believe in the Noble Book of Quran, and fasting is one of the main obligations for any Muslim. It's mentioned in the Quran, and there are many narrations in this regard. So for a Muslim to be a true Muslim, a practicing Muslim, he needs to say the prayer, he needs to fast, pay khums, zakat, go to hajj, and so on and so forth. Is Islam strict in this regard? If you mean that, the person who for no reason abandons prayer, fasting, hajj, yes, these people will be punished on the Day of Judgment, mm-hmm. because they are not acting upon their obligations.
True.
But I think now the main question, so from this angle, there is no difference between fasting and other acts of worship. On the Day of Judgment, you as a Muslim will be punished if Allah wills, because of the obligations that you abandoned and did not act upon without any excuse. So there is no difference between fasting and prayer, for example. But now the second point is about, maybe governmental punishment, the punishment that an Islamic government may impose upon the people. Again, there is no difference between fasting and prayer and Hajj and Khums and Zakat and so on and so forth. First of all, as an individual act, even within Islamic territory in which the constitution is based on Islamic laws, no one is going to be punished because of the fact that he is not acting upon prayer, fasting, Hajj, Khums, and Zakat.
Definitely.
So, no agent from Islamic government is going to, investigate the members of a family, whether they are saying the prayer, whether they are fasting, they are paying Khums, they are going to Hajj. So no one has the right to do that. This is absolutely against the Islamic laws and against the dignity of the Muslims. So again, there is no difference between fasting and other acts of worship from this perspective.
Very true.
Now, some acts, they have some social manifestations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, we can think of drinking alcohol in public. We can think of not practicing hijab in public, and we can think of not fasting or breaking fast or eating and drinking in public.
Let's differentiate between not fasting and breaking the fast in public, because not fasting, this is something private and personal, and no one will be punished for that, right?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. So before talking about why do we have, any punishment for that, I need to say that, again, there is a difference between an Islamic government and, non-Muslim countries. So, for example, in countries in which the Islam is not the base for the constitution, no Muslim has the right to punish even another Muslim for not practicing, for example, fasting. So, for example, you are living in UK, for example, or in the United States. You live in a Muslim community. You know a brother who is a Muslim, but you see that in public, he is not practicing fasting, and he's breaking, he's eating and drinking. Do you have any right to, like, punish him or her?
No.
Not at all. So in a non-Muslim country, no Muslim, will be punished for not acting upon Islamic obligations.
Very true.
It's true about, practicing hijab as well. It could be about drinking alcohol as well. I mean, in every country, in every region, people would be treated based on the law of that government. So only we are talking about a Muslim society in which Islam is the base for the the constitution and for the laws. And in the world, we have few countries who are thought to be like that. So let's talk about that from the Islamic Republic of Iran's perspective. Islamic Republic of Iran, its constitution is based on the Noble Book of Quran and the narrations of the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt. Now, if we want to answer this question from, like, a democratic way, we can say that the people in Islamic Republic of Iran, they have voted for Islam to be the source of the laws in the constitution.
True.
So even from a Western perspective, democracy requires that the viewpoint of the majority of the people should be respected.
The decision of the majority.
Exactly. Now, the majority, or rather the great majority of Iranians, Iranian population, they have voted for Islam to be the source.
True.
And most of the Iranians, they are, practicing Muslims. So if the majority of Iran's population, they have voted for Islam to be practiced, it means that they have voted for social, aspects of Islam to be respected as well.
Very true.
So the majority of Iran, when I say the majority, maybe we can say that the great majority of the people, they are practicing. And if there is a law in the constitution of Iran that no one should break his fast, should eat and drink publicly during the holy month of Ramadan, this law should be respected by all the Iranians based on democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And no Western country can blame Iran for that. The majority of the people, they have voted for this, and they expect the Islamic Republic to act upon this obligation and duty of the Muslims. Now, is it so we have some laws in Islam, in Iran's constitution, about the fact that people should not break their fast publicly. Is it based on the verses of the Quran and the narrations? Yes, of course. So, for example, we have some narrations which tell us that if some people, they are Muslims, they break their fast and they believe that, fasting is not an obligation. So they may be accused not only for breaking the fast, but also for apostasy. Let me just share one narration in this regard. I just want to mention that we should not think that this is a law forged by Islamic Republic of Iran and invented by, this government. No, we have some narration in this regard. For example, one of the companions of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that I asked him about an rajulun ukhidha fi shahr Ramadan waqad aftara thalatha marrat. They saw a man publicly, he's breaking his fast 3 times. And Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that yutfa'u ila al-imam, he will be given to the imam and he will be punished accordingly, because the punishment is different. Sometimes he is a practicing Muslim, he doesn't believe that fasting is not an obligation. Right, no, sure. He believes that it is an obligation, but for any reason, he is not practicing. Hmm. So for that, there might be a minor punishment. If there is the possibility, if he doesn't believe in fasting at all, then there is another scenario. So my point is that the laws of Islamic Republic of Iran, they are based on Islamic laws.
Yeah.
And Islamic laws require the people to practice the laws which have social manifestation. One of them is drinking alcohol. No one has the right to drink alcohol publicly in Muslim countries. Or practicing hijab, and also, practicing fasting. So we have these laws in the constitution which are based on the Islamic sources. Why we have some punishments? Because we know that there are different scenarios, different philosophies. Punishments, they prevent other people from committing the same. And the last one that I would like to share, that even if there is no law, I think that humanity and courtesy and politeness ask every Muslim to respect other Muslims as well. So imagine, even if you are not living in an Islamic country, we know that almost all the people in my community, they are fasting. So it's mm-hmm. against courtesy and politeness to, drink an alcohol in front of even, 9 years girls.
As they are expect a guest to respect their own laws and regulations while in their country.
Yeah.
So in different lands, in different actual homes, we need to respect the rules of the owner of the house.
So although there may not be any punishment for that, but as I mentioned, courtesy and politeness and humanity ask us to, have this kind of politeness, at least in front of other people. You mentioned those people who are diseased, they can eat in their homes mm-hmm. or privately, not in front of other people who are
And for
fasting.
A Muslim sheikh, if a Muslim unknowingly actually breaks his fast, and he has a problem, let's say he's suffering from a disease and he has a problem and he cannot fast, and he breaks his fast and soam in the street while others are fasting, so what is the decree and rule on this person?
For sure, Islamic laws are based on justice. So if that person has done that, unknowingly and without any purpose, without disrespecting the other people who are practicing fasting, for sure he will not be punished. And the Islamic juries and the Islamic judge, they will not pose any punishment for such a person. Because normally the people who, they break their fast knowingly, they show other signs which prove for the judge that he is doing that without any excuse. But if there are some excuses, for sure they will be forgiven.
And if knowingly a person actually breaks the fast?
As I mentioned, there are some punishment mentioned in the Iranian laws for such a person, which is based on the Islamic sources.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh Murtada Karimi from Qom Seminary Schools, and his answers. Scholarly answers to the questions which were posed here in this session. Dear brothers and sisters, many thanks for staying tuned and thanks for listening. We'll be back to you, inshallah, again with another topic to be discussed with regard to the questions that we might face in the holy month of Ramadan. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لا نخشى المحن.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
EU capitals have been asked by the European Commission to back legal action against AstraZeneca by the end of the week over an alleged breach of its contractual obligations to supply member states with its COVID vaccine. At a meeting with European Union Commission officials on Wednesday, 21st of April, diplomats from some member states raised concerns about the wisdom of the move, warning against rushing into a decision that might further undermine confidence in the vaccine. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Daniel Buffy. The piece is titled, EU asks states to back legal action against AstraZeneca. Stay with us for more of Daniel Buffy's article. European Union capitals have been asked by the European Commission to back legal action against AstraZeneca by the end of the week over an alleged breach of its contractual obligations to supply EU member states with its COVID vaccine. At a meeting with EU Commission officials on Wednesday, 21st of April, diplomats from some member states raised concerns about the wisdom of the move, warning against rushing into a decision that might further undermine confidence in the vaccine. The Anglo-Swedish company AstraZeneca remains a key supplier from which the European bloc is expecting a further 70 million vaccine doses in the second quarter of this year. But, according to a diplomatic source, the EU Commission's Vaccine Steering Board, containing representatives of all participating member states, was still asked to sign off on action by Friday in order to allow a claim to be filed. A spokesperson for the European Commission said no legal action had yet been taken. One diplomat said he believed there was sufficient support for a legal claim despite concerns being aired by France and Germany, among others. He said more than 20 EU member states had indicated they would back a legal claim against AstraZeneca. AstraZeneca delivered less than 30 million of the expected 120 million doses of the vaccine to EU member states in the first quarter of this year and refused to redirect vaccines produced in the United Kingdom to make up for the losses. The Commission sent a letter to the company on 19th of March this year, described as a notice for dispute settlement. According to the contract signed between the European Union and AstraZeneca, if a dispute arises, one of the parties shall first notify the problem with a letter. After 20 days from the written notice, they shall meet and attempt to resolve the dispute by good faith negotiations. On Thursday, Ireland's Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, said Dublin would back a legal claim by the European Commission. Speaking to the Irish Parliament, Stephen Donnelly said, with regard to AstraZeneca, a legal case has been initiated by the Commission, and earlier this week I have joined Ireland as one of the parties to the legal case, specifically around AstraZeneca's complete failure to meet its delivery and contractual agreements for April, May and June. This month, the Commissioner leading the European Union Executives Vaccine Task Force, Thierry Breton, told The Guardian that the bloc would have had even greater success than the United Kingdom in vaccinating its citizens if it had not had supply problems. The European Union is expecting more than 300 million doses of the vaccine to be delivered by all its suppliers over the next 3 months. Speaking on the Environmental Committee of the European Parliament on Thursday morning, 22nd of April, the Health Commissioner, Stella Kyriakides, said she was confident that the bloc would hit its target of vaccinating 70% of the population by the end of August. Stella Kyriakides said, "This is ambitious, but I believe that it is feasible. We have a much accelerated rollout for quarter two. There were big challenges in quarter one, and we are seeing this moving." Meanwhile, an AstraZeneca plant was inspected by Italian police at the request of Brussels in a sign of breakdown in relations between the Anglo-Swedish vaccine supplier and the European Union. Police officers were sent into the facility in the town of Anagni, east of Rome, Italy, after the European Commission contacted the Italian government with concerns. AstraZeneca has been accused by the European Commission of overselling its ability to deliver doses of the vaccine and reneging on its contract with the European Union after delivering less than a quarter of the 120 million doses of the vaccine it had promised this quarter. The European Union's executive branch believes the company has unfairly prioritized its contract with the British government. Following a report in the Italian media that a stockpile of 29 million doses of the vaccine had been discovered destined for the United Kingdom, AstraZeneca issued a statement dismissing the claim as inaccurate. AstraZeneca said no exports were currently planned outside of the European Union, other than to developing countries via the COVAX facility. And it was incorrect to describe the batches in the factory, run by the US-based company Catalent, to provide vial filling and packaging as a stockpile. There are 13 million doses of vaccine waiting for quality control release to be dispatched to COVAX as part of our commitment to supply millions of doses to low-income countries. The vaccine was made outside of the European Union and brought to the Anagni plant east of Rome to be filled into vials, the company said. It added that a further 16 million doses of the vaccine were waiting for quality control release before being dispatched to Europe. Close to 10 million doses were delivered to the European Union countries during the last week of March, and the balance in April, as the doses are approved for release after quality control. The statement from the office of the Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi confirmed that the Anagni plant east of Rome had been inspected at the European Commission's request and that batches were found were destined for Belgium. The Italian newspaper La Stampa had reported that the doses, almost twice the amount the European Union has so far received from AstraZeneca, were found hidden in the factory following a search by Italian police at the request of the European Commission, and that they were probably destined for the United Kingdom. The Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi caused controversy this month after blocking 250,000 AstraZeneca vaccine doses from being exported from the Anagni plant to Australia in response to the company failing to meet its European Union delivery targets. It is at least the second time that the European Commission has asked national authorities to investigate AstraZeneca production facilities. In January of this year, Belgian officials were asked to probe a plant in Seneffe, south of Brussels. European Union officials were suspicious of claims by the company that the plant had problems with low yield. It has long been suspected that doses of the vaccine had instead been shipped on a large scale to the United Kingdom, a suspicion for which no evidence has yet emerged.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.